If you go into the old library in Trinity College and look at the Book of Kells, it's worth a visit. It really is. It's a wonderful document. But what you're presented with are two sheets of paper open in front of you. One is a very decorative, obviously beautiful piece of work, and the other is a page of text. You can't touch it. You can't. They won't let you near it. Rightly so, too. I mean, especially somebody like me who might drip coffee on it or make a mark on it with a pen. It would be outrageous to have such a thing happen. But you get no indication of what else is in the book. You see these two beautiful pages and the rest of it is hidden. The same thing happens if you go out into the street and walk around, or walk around town, walk around Dublin, walk around Leinster. You see a page from the Book of the Universe, God's diary. The difference, the significant difference between the Book of Kells and the Book of Life is that you can come to the end of the Book of Kells and somebody has written out what's in it, so you know what the text contains. Whereas when you step out into the street, walk across a meadow, look at the world around, you're looking at the present day page in what could be described as God's diary. And our lifetime in one page of this giant book is probably about the size of a full stop. I mean, a human life is a very small thing in the modern scientific understanding. This is a huge difference between the life of that people envisaged back in biblical times. When the Bible was written, say about 4,000 years ago, and then in Europe, in the Christian era, people understood that there was about 4,000 years of pre-Christian life, perhaps 1,000 years of Christianity. The age of the human race was put at perhaps 5,000 or 6,000 years. Therefore, in that scheme of things, a human lifetime of 50 or 60 years is 10% of the whole. This makes people really important. This makes our lives really, really significant. And it makes it very believable that the last day is around the corner, that this is going to end as quickly as it began. So our arrangements, our view of our passage through life would have been very different back then. You know the story of the Bible. It starts off, as I read in the opening words, with the opening passage from the book of Genesis. This is a Gideon Bible, by the way, and no, I did not lift it out of some hotel room somewhere, I think it probably was at some stage. But it starts off with God creating the world. He makes a beautiful job of it in double quick time, I mean a week. Wonderful. He plants the early human beings in a beautiful garden, the Garden of Eden, and disaster falls. They don't meet a monkey, but they meet a snake, perhaps, and disaster. Now, the interesting thing about this disaster is that in Christian thinking, this disaster is seen as an out-and-out catastrophe that only the coming of Christ can erase, that we are damned and doomed and desolate as a result of that. But the interesting thing is that the Jewish understanding of leaving the Garden of Eden is that, of course they did. These were kids growing up in God's garden. God was their father. They grew up. Of course they left home. I mean, who wants to see people in old age still living at home with Ma and Pa? Leaving home was seen as a natural and necessary part of their evolution, and that unless Adam and Eve left the garden, they had nowhere to go, literally or psychologically. They could never grow up. The story continues, and they're all sorts of wonderful stories in the Bible. The story of Abraham, the story of Isaac, Jacob, Joseph and his amazing technicolor dream coat. These are absolutely glorious stories. and not a shred of evidence has been found that they ever existed. They don't need to exist. This is not history. This is not telling us about who our ancestors really are, how the world was really shaped. It's the same thing with the prophets, even King David. There's doubt about King David having existed. Somebody built the temple in Jerusalem, but was it Solomon? Your guess is as good as mine. I don't know. Then we come to the Christian part of the scriptures. It's seen as the fulfillment of the Old Testament. I do like the story from Luke that Aidan read for us. I think that this is proof positive that Jesus did not live in an organized church. I mean, come on, the Pharisee was the ideal person in church. Somebody who abides by the rules and pays his taxes and comes to church regularly and is an all-time good individual. I think he gets a hard time of it. I mean, he was a bit smug and he was proud of himself, but still. I think if you ask any church anywhere in the world whether they're going to have the tax collector or the Pharisee, I mean, the door is being slammed shut in the face of the tax collector. Other interesting thought. Jesus, when he was preaching, he preached a radical message. He gave very little instructions about how we should lead our lives or how we could lead our lives. Two things he does seem to have said, though, was one was pay your tax and the other was don't get divorced. Make up your own mind. Then the story moves on. We have a whole lot of letters. Every time I flick through the letters in Gospel, I am really bad. I think about the Monty Python sketch where the Monty Python crew are writing to St. Paul and they're saying, "Dear St. Paul, we've had enough letters. Please stop writing to us. Sign the Corinthians." It's quite difficult to know what these letters are about. We're totally out of the context. The Bible carries on and it ends with the book of the Apocalypse, the unveiling, the future. It predicts an absolutely amazing future. Jesus is going to return. If you believe certain slightly strange theologies, when he begins his descent to earth, the 144,000 of the blessed are going to rise to meet him, and then they'll all come down and rule. Oh, there would be a last judgment, so anyone who has misbehaved is going to be wiped out, and then everyone else will live in peace and harmony. All of these are good stories. They're amazing stories. But they're really, when I am reading the Bible now, I tend to think of it like an app on my phone. This is a guide for living a good life. But earlier in the year, I wanted to go away to France for the weekend. And Aer Lingus sent me pages of stuff about regulations in relation to COVID and this, that, and the other. And I had to download an app called Verifly and fill in a tedious amount of details. I mean, I'm not sure why where I was born has anything to do with anything, but anyway, I filled in all the details, downloaded all the details, copy of my vaccination cert and the whole lot. And then I realized I had to do it all again because I needed a different app to come home. So it went on and on. It was quite a tedious process. Then when the 1st of April came and my flight was called, all of this was gone. This was no longer necessary. So there I was. I had two redundant apps on my phone and I hadn't a clue how to get rid of them. I was carrying around a phone with these apps. And how do you get rid of an app off your phone? It's all right, I found out. Fortunately, my daughter-in-law is a whiz with computers. And I told her I have a technology problem. I think we could almost see the Bible in that light. It's a guide for living, but it's a guide for living a life that has gone. It doesn't necessarily speak to us in the present time. We become like the monkey, I think, if we devote too much attention to the Bible. It draws our attention in on things that were yesterday's problems, while we have a whole lot of real life, real difficulties we should face, if, and there's no reason to believe it's not, the earth is closer to 5,000 million years old than 5,000 years. This puts it in a different perspective. This is a whole. Our lives are tiny in this speck. It makes us far less important. But the journey is carrying on. Perhaps we have a mission here to fulfill. Perhaps there's a job for us to do. Perhaps our second in the sun has some meaning that we're missing because we're looking at the old guide to how we should live. It's not an easy one to face up to, that our lives are, in geological time, they're trivial, they're unimportant. But perhaps looking at this enlarged, lengthened time scale will make us think differently, will make us act differently, will make us look at our priorities. When the Bible was written, the world was a tiny place. It was a small area surrounding in the Middle East. The people there were living in a context that we can only imagine. We have no idea what it was like to live in Palestine in those days, or in the Middle East in those times. It's likely that they were concerned with the human problems that don't change at all from generation to generation. They wanted food for themselves and for their families. They wanted water. They wanted to see their children live in safety and in security. They didn't have a lot of care for the rest of the natural world. I mean, if they ate the plants or the animals, there was very little chance of anything being eaten to extinction. That power has changed. We can do huge damage to the world today, and we are. There's an extinction afoot of the natural world that is equivalent to the meteor strike that wiped out the dinosaurs. There are more animals and plants going extinct now, perhaps than any time, back to 65 million years. Is this what we want our legacy to be? Is this what we're looking at? Are we concerned about what Jesus may have said 2,000 years ago, when there are things in the world that we need to look at, when there are people we need to care for? I don't know the answer. And there's another question. If the universe is 15 billion years old, which this is the current thinking, I'm not arguing with it, I just don't know. I'm leaving the door open for further thought. And if there is a plan, if the universe is unfolding as it seems to be, if there is a plan, if there is a succession, if there is an end goal, do we need God to see it through? Or where is God in this? John Feehan absolutely believes that God is running this. Yes. He thinks that modern science has not only expanded the universe, but it has expanded God. God is no longer a little tribal leader in the Middle East. He is somebody who is inside or outside the universe. It's still a big concept. Rather than being, if you're sitting above a cloud, above a small territory in the Middle East, that's not as big and impressive a God as if you're standing outside the Milky Way, controlling the motion of the stars over billions of years rather than tens of years. What kind of a God would that be? Very different from the God in the Old Testament, I think. Bigger, more powerful, more impressive. I don't have the answer as to what that God would be like or whether that God exists. But it's something that perhaps should be thought about. And in the meantime, back to today. Today is a beautiful day. Go out and enjoy it and look at the world around you. Marvel at the world around you when you leave the church today. Look at the stones. Look at the small flies, the big flies, the birds, the other people. Look at the amazing world that we are, whether through design or just sheer dumb luck, lucky enough to be given today. Amen.